streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call
me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Ms. Bobby Sudbury, who is the founder of Katie's Way. Now, Bobby's daughter, Katie, met a man and fell in love, and at this time she was still in high school. The young man seemed polite, respectful, and caring towards Katie. Over the months, she grew to care deeply for this young man and experienced her first love beyond the family. About 6 months into the relationship, this young man began to change. He suddenly became rude and inconsiderate at times, but apologetic when Katie would stand her ground. This young man exhibited possessive and jealous behaviors. If Katie was away from him, he constantly called or would text her on the phone. At times, he even made accusations that she was lying to him or cheating on him with another. If she went away to visit family, he was crazed out of his mind about where she was and who she was with. Katie patiently tried to understand his insecurities and shortcomings and forgave him. Nonetheless, his behavior escalated. After several months of enduring this behavior, with the support of her family and friends, Katie came to realize that she was not able to help him understand her devotion to him and ended the relationship. He began stealing from her, assaulting her, and threatening her. On January 28, 2008, 5 days after filing the injunction against harassment, as Katie was walking home from school, this young man grabbed her from in front of her house and pulled her to the side yard of the house next door. He then killed her with a shotgun that he had hidden in his duffel bag, and then he turned the gun on himself and committed suicide. So before we hear the story from Bobby, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, I just want to thank everybody who tunes into the radio show every Wednesday night. And like we always do, we want to thank all our soldiers in 150 prisons across the country, men and women, fed and state. And we want to just thank them for always educating. And we want to thank our soldiers in the street as well that's doing the same thing. And without further ado, we're going to let Ms. Bobby come on the air, and she's going to formally introduce herself, and we're going to get going.
Hello, Boyd and Lucinda.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to, bring awareness to this very prevalent issue, and kind of share our story and what we do to hopefully continue bringing the awareness and promoting healthy relationships.
Yeah, sounds great. So now, Ms. Bobby, you can get into the situation that led to a true tragedy, because the only person can really tell it is a person who was there. So you can get into that right there, and after you finish, then we'll have some questions for you. But you can go ahead and get started with your story.
Okay, well, basically... when Katie was 16 years old, she's a beautiful young lady, had her whole life ahead of her, everything going for her. She has two brothers and two sisters, we all did family stuff together. We went on vacations together. My husband and I really, really focused on our children and what their needs were. And, they always took priority over everything. And so when Katie was 16 years old, for the first time, she met this young man, and
and basically they were friends. They had mutual friends. He was new to the area. And so, you know, he started new at Moon Valley High School, and he made friends just like every other kid does when they start school. And they eventually, you know, came to know each other, realize each other, you know, and spent time with each other and everything. And they decided they were going to date. And, you know, Katie had has a baby sister, Virginia. Her nickname is Mookie. And so, you know, being true to being a little sister, she, you know, came and kind of like ratted Katie out, you know, said, you know, Katie's got a boyfriend and all that. And so, you know, me and my husband just said, you know, asked her if it was true. She said, yeah. And so we said, okay, you know, time to bring him to the house. You know, we need to, you know, talk to him and make sure he knows we exist and all of that. And she did. And he seemed to come willingly, and he seemed like a nice young man. He presented well. He was charming and very polite, you know, referred to me as yes, ma'am, and my husband is yes, sir. He shook my hand and shook my husband's hand when he met us. And, you know, we asked him some questions. You know, we didn't grill him or anything like that, but, you know, we basically, you know, wanted to find out a little information about him, and we found out he was down the street and around the corner with his mother and baby brother, and he had an older sister and brother who were adults, and he liked Moon Valley High School. He was on his way to, you know, he's on target to graduate in 2008, and, you know, basically it all seemed, you know, like he seemed like a typical young man and, you know, very interested in our daughter. And, you know, as time went by, he, you know, bought her a couple of gifts, something for Christmas, another something for Valentine's Day. She thought that was very romantic. We also watched his behavior around her. Did, you know, he respect her? Did he treat her with respect and whatnot? And he seemed to, you know, he would come over and swing on the front porch swing with her, open the door for her, you know, I mean, just walk her into school. And, you know, when he wasn't going to be late for class, he'd walk her to class, you know, just, you know, little things like that that, you know, made it look like it was a typical dating relationship. But about, I don't know, five months into the relationship, our youngest daughter, Mookie, she comes to us and she says, you know what, I don't like that kid, Daniel. I don't like him at all, you know. And it was just so random. And I looked at her and I said, okay, what's the problem? And she goes, well, I don't know. I just don't like him, Mom, you know. And I said, well, you know what, honey, you need to give me something here, because I can't go to Katie and say, hey, Mookie doesn't like Daniel. He's out of the picture, you know, kind of thing. So she wasn't really forthcoming with a reason why or any kind of examples or anything. So I kind of just, you know, sat back for a second and thought, you know, what's really going on here? Now, Katie and Mookie were very, very, very close. They shared a room together. They did everything together. I mean, they, you know, as much as they were very, very close, but they were very, very opposite in so many ways, you know, physically as well as personality-wise. But they balanced each other, and they just did everything together. Well, that was up until this young man came into the picture. And so, you know, I kind of looked at it like, okay, wow, could Mookie be jealous, you know? And so I just looked at her, and I said, you know what? I said, just give them some time. They're getting to know each other. And, you know, once things level off, which they should, you know, they'll start including you and bringing you into what they're doing and taking you with them and stuff like that. And she just kind of said, you know, yeah, whatever, Mom. And, you know, went on about her business. Now, you know, Katie was very humble and quiet and soft-spoken, you know, whereas Mookie was very assertive, you know, and the type of person that, you know, she basically spoke her mind and everything like that. And so this young man knew that Mookie did not much care for him. And apparently he took it very personal and took offense to it. So he started, like, antagonizing Mookie. And I'm sure she antagonized back, but eventually it had escalated to the point that on one occasion he came over to the house while my husband and I were at work, which was a no-no because the rule in our house is nobody's allowed there unless my husband and I are home, you know, just the people that live there. And, you know, nonetheless, he had come over to the house with a couple of friends, and, you know, they were playing Halo and listening to music, and at a point in time when Katie and one of the friends was playing Halo, Daniel and the young man and another of the friends had, you know, been kind of just walking around the house or whatever, but and they went into Mookie's room. And, you know, Mookie wasn't home from school or anything like that, so they had absolutely no business in Mookie's room. And what Daniel did was he took something out of Mookie's room out to our carport with his friend who had video capability on his phone, and he took that item and lit it on fire and had his friend videotape it. Then they uploaded it to his MySpace page, you know, which is Facebook back in the day, and then contacted Mookie and said, you know, look what we did. Go check out, you know, his MySpace page. And so basically, you know, Mookie saw it, and she was not a happy girl after that. As a matter of fact, she contacted my husband. She let him know what was going on and whatnot. And, you know, we really had to take some time to calm her down because, I mean, she felt violated on a couple of levels. You know, they invaded her privacy in her room. They stole something from her, and then they, you know, lit it on fire, you know. And basically what they did was they were trying to cyberbully her, you know, which is huge now, you know, and it happens all the time. And, you know, so basically we calmed her down, and we sat Katie down, and we just, you know, told her, you know, it's like, okay, first of all, what were you thinking? You know, we didn't believe for a second that she took part in what he had done. Although, had she not allowed them to come into the house, this probably would not have happened. And so, you know, we were just like, you know what, we're done. There are so many things wrong with what he did, okay? He, you know, I mean, it's like baseball, three strikes and you're out. Well, there's like five or six strikes going on here. And so we were just like, no more chances for this kid. He is not allowed around the house. We don't, you know, do not... You know, he cannot pick you up on the way to school anymore. Don't ask us if you can go anywhere or do anything with him. You know, that's it. You know, and then we encouraged her to end the relationship. Now, we only encouraged her to end the relationship, and I'm sure you all understand why, is because, you know, what do people do, or teenagers for that matter, when you tell them they're forbidden or not to do it? You know, they oftentimes
anyway.
Will... Oh, yeah, they'll be more inclined to do it, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and that wasn't really in Katie's nature, but given the fact that this is the first time she has actually loved somebody outside of the family unit, you know, we weren't willing to take that chance. So we just encouraged her to end the relationship. And basically, she did not end the relationship at that time. You know, she did continue to see him. But this particular incident seems like the time when he basically flipped the script on Katie. He went from being this really nice, charming, caring, giving individual, you know, who seemed to really, you know, appreciate her and everything, to very possessive and jealous and condescending and just mean-spirited, all around mean-spirited. I mean, I saw her coming down the hall one time, and he was hollering at her through the phone. And I just looked at her, and I said, is that him? And she said, yeah. And I said, you know, what's his problem? And she goes, oh, he's mad about something or another. I said, well, then hang up the phone. I said, you have the power. You don't have to listen to that. Nobody should talk to you or treat you that way. You know, and it was times like that that I would, you know, try to capitalize on the moment and say, you know, look, you don't deserve to be treated that way. You know, when you're in a relationship, it should be happy. It should feel good. You know, does your dad treat me that way? I would ask her. And absolutely not. Okay. And I would ask her, do I treat your father like that? No way. And, you know, it's not because he's a big guy or anything like that and I'm afraid of him. It's because I love the man. I care about him. You know, I don't ever want to be responsible for hurting him, and he feels the same way about me. You know, just trying to get her to understand. And, you know, I believe she would listen to me, but then, you know, here I'm a parent, you know, I'm old, and, you know, how could I possibly relate and whatnot? And, you know, so it became very, very apparent that she needed to hear it from her peers. And eventually she did, after several more months of dealing with this behavior and watching it escalate from him, you know, being very possessive and jealous and, you know, not wanting her to be around certain, you know, any friends or anything like that. But he even didn't want her around family. You know, and I mean, he did certain things to, you know, try to drive a wedge between us and her. You know, a couple of things he did was one time he called the house, or actually several times he called the house randomly, and he really didn't care who answered the phone because I answered it one time. And he said, do you know your daughter's a bisexual? You know, and I was just like, wow, really? Great. You know, not a problem. Hung up the phone. You know, and, you know, I, you know, he said it like it was a bad thing, which, you know, quite honestly, we love our children, okay, unconditionally. So, you know, if they choose a lifestyle different from ours, we're not going to stop loving them. We're not going to have a problem with them, you know.
Right.
And so when that didn't work, okay, he tried this other thing, and this is when we also knew that the relationship was becoming physically abusive. It's already been emotionally and verbally abusive, okay, and psychologically abusive, with him yelling at her and screaming at her and, you know, talking down to her and everything like that. But now it's gotten physically abusive because, in the way we know this is, they're in an argument, okay, and he literally snatches her phone from her, okay. This is a problem for two reasons. Number one, that's physically, you know, reaching out to somebody and snatching from them because, you know what, nobody has the right to snatch anything from you, you know. And then the second thing about that is he's just taken away her ability to call for help, which is against the law. So what he does with her phone is he brings up text messaging and he pulls up my number and my husband's number. And he says, Mom, Dad, this is Katie. You know, I've been a really bad girl lately. I've been having sex with older men, doing drugs, and drinking a lot of alcohol. You know.
Wow.
I get this text message in the middle of the day. Yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, the first thing I thought is, wow, this kid really thinks we're stupid.
Right.
You know, because, first of all, I know my daughter. You know, we know that she's taking care of her business, all right? She is getting good grades in school. She's, you know, a high B, low A average, okay? She actually has a job at this time. So she literally does not have the time to be doing this kind of stuff, you know? And the other thing is I don't know too many teenagers that are going to rat themselves out like that.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're a lot more intelligent than that, you know. So basically I text him back and I said, you need to give Katie back her phone. And he became infuriated and broke the phone in half. And in a matter of a few months, he broke her phone on four different occasions.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, and, you know, because it just kept escalating and escalating. And, you know, it got to a point to where our oldest son's girlfriend at the time, who was just a couple years older than Katie, and Mookie actually sat Katie down for, you know, their little intervention. And, you know, they sat her down and they just basically talked to her about, you know, basically everything I'd been telling her, but it's coming from her peers now. And, you know, it was a wake-up call for her. And so she texted him, and she broke up with him. And this is good news. We were happy about this because she was, you know, finally realizing that, you know, this is just inappropriate behavior. She doesn't have to put up with this. And this breakup lasts 3 weeks, which is the longest one yet. You know, I mean, they had little mini, you know, I'm not talking to you kind of things going on when he was being mean to her because she wasn't one to just stand there and take it. But this one lasted for 3 weeks, and the reason it only lasted 3 weeks is because, you know, when his normal apology, you know, didn't work, you know, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that, I love you, You know, I just worry about you all the time. You know, when that wasn't working anymore, he pulled out the guilt card, which is basically he had threatened to kill himself, which is very, very common in an abusive relationship. And, you know, this was not information that Katie shared with us at the time. I actually got this from her journal. So she texts us and she says, you know, I'm going to go back to him. I can't leave him like this because, you know, what Katie didn't understand is that because she doesn't have a clinical degree, this is nothing more, she was not the person that could help him. And honestly, this is nothing more than a manipulative tactic to rein her back in. Because, you know, there's a psychological spin to it where, you know, the abuser is trying to strip the victim of their power and control by being demeaning and mean and talking down to them. And, you know, they're really trying to, you know, exercise all this power and control over them. So when an abuser says, you know, if you don't go back with me or if you don't come back with me, I'm going to kill myself. In essence, what they're doing is they're empowering the victim for a brief moment, which, you know, eventually sucks the victim back in, you know, because they do still care about that person and they feel that sense of empowerment. So they're going to help that person. They're going to fix that person. And see, that's what Katie was about. She was about helping people and fixing people. And, you know, that's just one of the things that, you know, people try to do for other people. And unfortunately, you know, the relationships are abusive. You know, there's a stereotype to, you know, people, you know, victims in abusive relationships that, you know, they must have low self-esteem and not think much of themselves and stuff like that. Well, that wasn't Katie. Katie knew what she was about. I mean, the girl had been accepted to NAU. And she was also in line, she was going to receive a scholarship. I mean, she had received, you know, merit awards from NAU and the U of A. So, I mean, she knew what she was all about, and she was taking care of her business. So it was about fixing him and helping him, because while Katie came from a very blessed and loving environment, him not so much, you know. And so she was trying to show him the love, but because the environment he came from was not a loving environment, he was not receptive, you know, and whatnot. So, you know, she breaks up with him, then she goes back with him after the 3 weeks, and then, you know, it's not long before he starts acting up again and being mean and his behavior's escalating that she just finally ends the relationship on her own terms. You know, this is based on her decision and everything. And this is when I know she's done. She is completely done with him. And, you know, she shared with me, I was the first person she shared, you know, the information with that she had broke up with him and everything. And the reason was is because her and I were actually going out shopping one day. And we are at the mall and we hear this person hollering across the parking lot, and you know, it's kind of unnerving, and you know, you're kind of like looking around going, where is that coming from? And it's bouncing off walls, so you can't really find it, the source for it. And so I asked Katie, I said, where's that coming from? And she looks past me and she says, oh, that's him. He's mad at me. And I said, well, why? What's going on? And she said, well, because I broke up with him. You know, and I told her, I said, wow. I said, what happened? And she said, well, you know what? He's just too immature. He's never going to grow up, you know. He doesn't want me to go to college. He doesn't, you know, want to go with me to college or anything like that. He just wants me to stay here in Phoenix and do nothing but be with him, you know. And she knew. She had places to go, people to see and things to do and things she wanted to do, you know. I mean, it was NAU first, and then it was going to be California and the San Diego area, UC San Diego, to study marine biology. Because she had this extreme love for animals. So she really had it going on and had a plan and everything. And, you know, he did not want to, you know, go along with her plan. So she ended the relationship. And, boy, I tell you, it was like a weight had been lifted off her shoulders. She was back to being, you know, frolicky and happy with us and doing things with us and everything and not feeling stressed out or anything like that. It was really a nice change to see. But unfortunately, when they were together, he texted her and called her constantly all the time, so much so that it was intrusive. But once he broke up with her, it increased exponentially. It was ridiculous how much he was texting her and calling her, and it was very manic behavior. One minute, I love you, I want you back, you know, I can't live without you, this, that, and the other. The next minute, you know, I hate you, and calling her names and just really going off on her and stuff like that. So, you know, this behavior just continued to escalate, and over the next couple of weeks, he actually assaulted her in public on 3 different occasions. And, you know, I mean, the police were called all 3 times. The first time, I'm not sure if there was a report taken, but the next 2 times was at school. And we know that a report was taken, but the first time the officer said, because she couldn't name a witness when he assaulted her, that he was not going to arrest her and we couldn't arrest him and we could not file charges. Mm-hmm. And so the second time he assaulted her at school, which is the 3rd time overall, she's smart. She looked over his shoulder. She saw somebody standing there that she knew and witnessing the whole thing. So when she got away from him and went to the office, she reported that there was a witness. The police were called. They took his statement and everything. And, you know, essentially the officer said, you know, well, the DA is going to have to decide whether or not they want to press charges. So, again, he was not arrested. Now, the first time that he assaulted her at school, he was suspended. The second time, he was expelled from school. So the school did what they were supposed to do, you know. And the very next day after the second assault at school, I had received a call from Phoenix PD, and they said, ma'am, you need to go get an order of protection for your daughter. And I said, okay, he assaulted her yesterday. What's happened in the last 15 hours that you're now telling me to get an order of protection, because nobody told us to get one yesterday? And he says, well, you know, this young man has threatened to kill your daughter and himself.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, you don't have to tell me twice. So I got right up. First thing I did was check on Katie and make sure she was okay, because, you know, he had been in the house. He knew where her room was, you know. So I checked on her. She was fine, woke her up, told her, look, you know what, Dad and I have to go to the courthouse. This is what's going on, kind of explained it to her, and told her, you're not going to school today. Do not answer the door. Don't go by the windows, nothing, okay? And do not answer any of his phone calls or text him back or anything like that. Don't communicate with him. So we go to the courthouse. We fill out the paperwork to get an order of protection, as it was suggested. We go before the judge, and he says, I'm sorry, ma'am, I can't give you an order of protection. And I was just like, really? Well, why not? Well, the relationship between your daughter and her former boyfriend do not fit the relationship guidelines under the law, which, you know, because they were only formally dating. You know, she wasn't married to him, formerly married to him, living with him, formerly living with him, pregnant by him, or related, blood related to him. It wasn't, we weren't able to get the order of protection. So that's why we could only get an injunction against harassment. And,
wow.
Yeah. And so I called the officer after.
They thought you could get that against anybody that was harassing you or bothering you.
In order of protection?
Yes.
You would think so. Okay,
yeah.
And I've heard of other instances where a former girlfriend has been harassing a current wife, you know, in a relationship and whatnot, and the current wife could get an order of protection against that former girlfriend. So, you know, I really don't understand why we were not able to get an order of protection, even though the relationship guidelines did not fit, you know.
Right.
I mean, given that other circumstance. But nonetheless, you know, I did walk out of there with something, an injunction against harassment. But, I mean, the difference between the two is very vast. You know, an injunction against harassment just basically says don't harass this person, and that's it, you know. Where an order of protection says not only don't you, you're not allowed to harass this person, but you need to stay away from this person, where they go, you know, school, work, home, where they frequent. And also, too, an order of protection provides that, you know, if firearms can be confiscated as well, you know. And so, unfortunately, you know, that was not, you know, what we were able to get. And when I left the courthouse, I called the officer and I said, you know, look, I wasn't able to get an order of protection. All I could get was an injunction against harassment. And he just basically told me, I'm sorry, ma'am, there's nothing we can do for you. Yeah. And I wasn't quite understanding, you know, why there wasn't anything else they could do for us. I understand now. And the reason is because police officers only serve order of protections. They don't serve injunction against harassment, or that's the understanding I have. And so basically I told him, I said, well, when you find him, you know, I hope, you know, you guys are still looking for him. When you do find him, let me know, and I'll serve the injunction against harassment against him. Well, that was definitely wrong, too, but nobody let me know that, you know, because I was steady looking for him. I was driving through his neighborhood. I was trying to find him myself because I was going to serve those papers on him. What I didn't know is that if I served those papers on him, it wouldn't have been a valid service, because in the state of Arizona, you have to be a certified process server to serve any legal documents. Well, I'm not. Yeah, so, you know, we got shut down everywhere, and then we weren't even getting the information we needed. You know, and, you know, we kept her out of school for the rest of the week. I mean, we were just like, we didn't know what to do. I mean, we just thought we needed to, you know, come together as a family and protect her. And so, you know, we implemented the buddy system. The girl could not go anywhere without us, without one of us there. And, I mean, imagine you're a teenager and you can't go anywhere without your parents.
Right.
I mean, what did she do so wrong to, you know, that's like being grounded, you know what I mean, being punished and whatnot, you know what I mean? And she didn't do anything wrong here, you know? So, mm-hmm. You know, this went on for several days, and, you know, it eventually things seemed to calm down a little bit. At least, you know, Katie was telling us that things had calmed down, and she had felt comfortable going back to school the following Monday. But when we were having Sunday dinner, she got a text message from one of his friends, a female friend. And this girl says, why are you doing this to Daniel? This is all your fault. Can't you just let this go? Really? You know, I mean, I saw her shoulders slump, and I was just like, what? And she, you know, she let me read the text message. And so I text the person back, and I said, you know what? This is between us and him. It's not your business.
Right.
And I sent the text. I turned off her phone, and I just looked at her, and I said, okay, we need to talk about a safety plan. We need to talk about what are you going to do if he rolls up on you? You know, and she just looked at me and she said, Mom, she says, I'll do what I need to protect myself, but he's not going to hurt me. And she just, you know, went into her bedroom. Well, you know, her friend, our son's girlfriend was here as well as Mookie. So we, and, you know, basically I told them, I said, okay, go in and talk to her about a safety plan. You guys know the drill, you know what kind of safety plan, and I kind of briefed them real quick and everything. They went in and they talked to her, and, you know, everybody kind of went their separate ways that evening. You know, dinner was done and all that, and the next day we get up. My husband's already gone to work, I've gotten ready for work and I'm about to head out the door, but I usually had about 10-15 minutes, time to spend, with the girls in the morning and everything, and talk to them about their day and everything. And I looked at Katie and I said, "Are you sure you want to go to school today? You know, if you don't, that's fine. We'll figure something out." And she said, "Mom," she says, "I have got to get, back in school. I've got to get caught up on my studies. I've been accepted to NAU. I want to, get that scholarship and everything. So, I got to get back there." And, this is all time where, she's really excited about school and everything too, because, we've ordered the cap and gown. She's fixing to graduate in a few months. She's in her last semester of high school. Senior pictures have been scheduled and all of that. She wants to get back around her friends and everything. And, she's just, "Look, Mom, I've got a ride to school and a ride home from school," And that tells me, hey, she's thinking safety plans. So she listened to the girls last night, And I'm like, "Okay, well, definitely sounds like you have a plan." And, I just looked at her and I said, "All right, then. You have a great day, and I love you." And those are always my parting words to my kids. I want my kids to know I love them no matter what, because you never, ever, ever know what's going to happen. And, as a parent, you're always thinking it could happen to you. You get in your car, you go to work, you might get an accident or something, right?
Yeah.
She looks at me and she says, "Mom," she looks at me and she says, "I love you too, Mom." And what, I didn't know was that would be the last time I would hear those beautiful words from her. That would be the last time I'd see her lively little face. Because, see, later that day, as she was on her way home from school, he did roll up on her right in front of our house and had a shotgun in a duffel bag. And after a brief altercation, he shot her point blank and then killed himself.
Wow.
And, yeah, you never, ever imagine that could happen to you or your child. And it just does not feel right. Every day, what we knew as normal no longer exists. We don't take family portraits.
Right.
Somebody's missing. How do you do that? And so, after the fog had lifted and, we got through the funeral and everything, it was a good 3 weeks before I had gone back to work. I got into counseling and everything and, to deal with it and, help the family deal with it and all of that. And I just felt in my heart that I needed to do something, and a woman from down the street had actually, was a professor at ASU West, and she had come to me and said, "Will you tell Katie's story? I'm having a woman's conference and, we'd be honored if you tell Katie's story." And I said, without hesitation, absolutely. Now, I don't even know where that came from, because I was not the type of person to really, I blended in, for lack of a better term. I wasn't the type of person that really, put myself out in front of people. I didn't have a problem with being in front of people, but, I just, never saw myself as somebody to be, a public figure or whatever. And, but something inside me, just came out before I had a chance to even think about it. And so as I was preparing to do that, I realized that, I was, doing some research, and I realized that 81% of adults and parents didn't even realize that teen dating violence was so prevalent. And one in five young people. Now, this is when we first started on the journey. It was one in five young people that reported being in an abusive relationship, you know. And seeing these statistics and realizing this, I was just like, you know, wow, we were not alone. We felt like we were alone, but we were not alone. And so we kind of took two paths, because basically when you go through something like this, you have a choice, okay? You know, when you lose a child, the first thing you want to do is just curl up and die with them, you know?
Right.
You just feel like, you know, how can you possibly go on, you know? And then the other choice is to make a difference.
Right.
And eventually we made that choice to make a difference. And we kind of took a two-pronged approach. And, or I should say, we had the opportunity to take a two-prong approach. First, with the professor asking me to share Katie's story, which evolved into Katie's Way, eventually. Because I realized, you know, when I did get up there and tell her story, I actually did a really good job, and people were really moved. And it was very impactful, and I realized, you know what, that's my calling. That's what I need to do. But the other thing was, is the Arizona Coalition Against Domestic Violence and former Senator Jonathan Tatum were working on a bill. They had been actually trying to pass a bill for a couple of years, which is now known as Katie's Law, where those dating and relationships now have protection under the law.
Oh, awesome.
Because, yeah, dating relationships fit the relationship guidelines now. It was added, so it's referred to as Katie's Law. That was done on a personal level. You know, I testified before the Senate and House committees to, you know, get that passed. But and it's a great thing. You know, it's too late for Katie, but it has helped so many other people in dating relationships. And I've had several prosecutors from different counties come to me and say, you know, thank you very much for, you know, working with them, you know, on this law and everything, because it really helps us do what we need to do in the courtroom, you know, because, I mean, you know, the abuse doesn't necessarily start when two people move in together, you know. Oftentimes,
right.
You know, it starts in the dating relationship part of it, you know, kind of thing. So we just really embarked on this journey and said, you know what, we're going to make a difference. And since then, we have created a very balanced program where the first part of it is telling Katie's story, you know, sharing Katie's story and whatnot. And then after we share Katie's story, we go into the pattern of abuse. We go into certain red flags that fly under the radar. We talk about options to safely exit an abusive relationship, which is our segue into educating the community about Katie's Law. Because the thing about laws is, you know, you can pass all the laws you want to till the cows come home. If people don't know they exist, are they going to implement them? Are they going to utilize them?
Right.
You know?
Nope.
So we talk about Katie's Law, and then we conclude every presentation with the elements of a healthy relationship. You know, it's like what goes into a healthy relationship. And, you know, according to Katie's Way, along with respect, honesty, and love, it's based on PEACE, which is an acronym we created based on Katie, you know, which she was a very patient individual who was empathetic. She was accepting. She was caring. And she treated everyone as equals. You know, so, you know, you figure respect, love, honesty, patience, empathy, acceptance, caring, and equality. You put all those things in, and those are the elements of a healthy relationship. So what we did is we created what we call the peace, rights, and responsibilities. Because in every relationship, we all have certain rights and we all have certain responsibilities in that relationship. And so far, we have, you know, actually... over the years, the demand for our services has grown exponentially. And that's not an exaggeration. That is a very literal statement. You know, I believe the first year, you know, now from 2008 through 2010, I worked a full-time job. And within those years, those 3 years, we probably did, you know, 50, maybe 60, we participated in 60 events, you know, mm-hmm. doing presentations and setting up display tables. And then in the end of 2010, my husband and I, you know, sat down and took a leap of faith. I walked away from my full-time job and devoted myself to Katie's Way 100%. And
wow.
Basically, in 2011, we actually participated in 91 events.
It's a lot of events.
And yeah, and in 2012, 128.
Holy cow.
And yeah, so from 2008 into 2000, all the way through 2012, we basically made ourselves available and participated in so many events that we impacted at least 32,000, you know, people in the community.
Right.
But what the exponential part comes in with this year alone, okay, we're what, almost 8 months into the year, eight, 4 months into the year? Well, we've already done 93 events this year. So we've already surpassed all of 2011. But because there are so many more people attending presentations and the events that, you know, we set up display tables at, we have already gone over 32,000 people this year alone. So
wow.
Directly, we're at 64,000, okay, in just 5 short years. And that doesn't even include the nearly 30 media appearances that we've made on radio as well as TV locally and nationally syndicated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're probably looking at, you know, 7 figures as far as, you know, the amount of people that we have had the opportunity to bring awareness to and, you know, promote healthy relationships.
Right.
And we're still, you know, going strong, and we have a plan, because we're anticipating we're going to probably participate in at least 160 events this year alone.
Right. Well, we know you're coming to our event September 14th.
Oh, yes. We will definitely
be there. In Phoenix.
Yep. We are always on board whenever there is an event that has anything to do with, you know, putting an end to violence, you know, any kind
definitely.
Of violence, you know, really, you know, bullying, you know, anything that goes on like that. And I tell you what, I give it to you guys for, you know, putting together such a wonderful event, because events are, you know, they are something else, boy. They are an animal that takes on a life of its own, don't they?
Oh yeah, they do.
Yeah, but they're very good things, bringing awareness and, you know, making it happen. And, you know, I mean, I just look for the time when all of us working together like this, that we create that societal shift where healthy relationships are the norm, not
right.
unhealthy relationships, you know.
And
so
that's the way it should be. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Because, you know, I mean, come on. If you're in a relationship, that person should be encouraging you and empowering you. They should be,
right.
you know, making you feel good, and you should, you know, be laughing, having more times of laughter and happiness and stuff like that. There are going to be serious moments, and there's going to be times when people disagree, and that's fine. Everybody disagrees in relationships. But
right.
it's how you handle those disagreements that make all the difference in the world. You know,
exactly.
a disagreement doesn't have to be an argument, and it never has to be a fight. You know, I mean, because
it definitely doesn't have to get to the point of you have to put your hand on somebody.
Oh, exactly. You know, or even just call somebody a name or anything like that. Really? I mean, if you care about that person, why would you do that? And that's the thing I put out there to people, you know, is, you know, think about it. The person that you're with, if they're saying mean things to you, they're supposed care about you. That's not caring. That's
no, that's misunderstanding right there.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And, you know, this business about, you know, oftentimes, you know, people think that when somebody's jealous or displaying some possession or whatever, that, you know, they feel like, you know, that person really cares about them and, you know, they love them and all of that, you know, or when they're texting them constantly and everything. You know, I'm telling you right now, that is not love. That is not somebody caring about you.
Ain't no question about that, Ms. Bobby, you know. And we just want to say we definitely thank you for allowing us to do this interview with you, Ms. Bobby. And I just want to let all the viewers know worldwide here on our show tonight, I met Ms. Bobby through watching TV, which I watch the ID channel all the time. That's my favorite channel. And I seen Ms. Bobby on the ID channel, wrote the information down, and Googled her name up, and Lord and behold, boom, that's Ms. Bobby. And she just so happened to be living in Arizona. And I was like, wow, you know, and read up on her story, you know, a little bit more. And I said, this is the type of young lady I want to me and my wife to reach out to, because she's fighting for the same thing we fighting for, you know, healthy relationships and people not killing people over abuse, you know. So we just wanted to give you a definite thank you. And we want you to hold on for a few minutes, Ms. Bobby. We'll be back with a few callers on the line waiting for you. We're going to go to a song and a couple of commercials, and we'll be right back with Ms. Bobby from Katie's Way.
Every day's a struggle, you know.
Constant struggle, you know.
Constant struggle, every day.
Understand that, you
know. Gotta keep moving, you know.
Check that,
you know. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell.
Everybody first look broke like me. Wish that I could ball like them ballers on the street. Living that everyday lamp. Made me take a step back, look at myself and check mine. Now I ain't leaving till I get mine. Trying to keep the distance between the hate and the greed. Between Satan and me. And all them problems that it come with is more than one need. Me, been the rest of mathematics on them all. Put your hands up, drop your bag when you out them all. Send it back to the block. Big money grip, still hungry for them chips. Don't make me flip. Car your frame with the diamond chips. I just bought a new whip. Can it paint a double dip? Every day's a hustle. I'm trying to get it, trying to bubble. It's my life and my struggle.
See, life is just a story that someone has to tell. We're living in this struggle.
It is seen at 25, yet still I ride. And I'm black and proud. My people say it loud. Walking like I talk and hold your head above the clouds and smile. Never let them see you sweat, I bet. The streets is always watching, catch you slipping, chicken hawking. Zombies out here walking, listening to the music. If you pay attention, I'll show you how to use it. I flip flows on shows like life is so abusive. Adapt and overcome the struggle like how he do it. I prove it. Showing the world I am a king. Sing to the rhythm, my queen. This is your dream. Man in the building, example for all to see. Life can be a bitch, keep stroking it till you ski. Stand on your own, keep fighting and never leave. Foundation is the knowledge I'm kicking, we're gonna bleed.
See, life is just a story that someone has to tell. We're living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. So try. Someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle. just a story that someone has to tell. So try.
The hottest newspaper in Arizona. Buckeye Valley News. If you like to advertise, contact Sharon at 623-386-4426. That's 623-386-4426. And say, the streets don't love you back. Sent you. It's the book release by author Donna Buchanan. The name of the book, Second Chance Running, will be released in paperback and on ebook on September the 30th, 2013. It's a powerful story to learn from. Released from prison July 4th, 2013, she is now educating our youth and others after spending 13 years in prison. She is a member of the Streets Don't Love You Back movement, ran by Rob and Lucinda Boyd. She became a member while in prison. For more information, go to www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. That's www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. Coming this September the 14th, 2013, it's the Streets Don't Love You Back Domestic Violence Awareness Day. Our goal is to educate our youth about the dangers of gang violence, drugs, abuse, and that there are many alternatives to street life. This day is to network, helping others against the abuse. The Streets Don't Love You Back movement help and educate all year round. We will be collecting clothes, jackets, blankets, underwear, socks, backpack, and hygiene products for the domestic violence shelters. Please let us know if we have to pick up, or you can send your donations to P.O. Box 1093, Maricopa, Arizona 85139. That's P.O. Box 1093, Maricopa, Arizona 85139. The Streets Don't Love You Back Domestic Violence Awareness Day. This September the 14th, 2013. The walk starts 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., starting at the top level boxing gym. It's the Streets Don't Love You Back Domestic Violence Awareness Day, September the 14th, 2013. Sponsored by the Streets Don't Love You Back Movement, Youth Block, the top level boxing gym, the Phoenix Boys and Girls Center, the Black Information Highway, and JCS 2364.
Hey, and welcome right back here to the hottest show worldwide, the Streets Don't Love You Back. And we kicking it tonight with our guest, Miss Bobby in the house from Katie's Way. And we got a few callers, Miss Bobby, and we're going to start taking them callers right now. And we're going to go to the last four digits, 1188. Caller, you're on air.
Hi, last this is Arzina Flores. And
yes,
I just wanted doing? To... Good, thank you. I just wanted to say it was a great interview and very touching, and very happy to be a part of your organization as well. It's really a heartfelt interview listening to the whole situation that happened with Katie.
We appreciate that. Would you like to ask Ms. Bobby a question tonight while you're on the line?
Yes. I was just wondering about how they wouldn't give you a restraining order. I know that you kind of mentioned a couple of things as to why they weren't able to give that to you for her. Has that, do you know if that's changed as of now?
Yes, it has changed as of now due to Katie's Law. You know, with Katie's Law, those in dating relationships now can get an order of protection because, you know, basically so long as the dating relationship is romantic or sexual in nature, which, you know, we know not every dating relationship is sexual, but, I mean, if you think about it, isn't dating romantic?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're in a dating relationship, and that goes for minors and adults, the only thing is with a minor, the parent has to go and get the order of protection. It would be really great if the minor was able to do that, but, you know, the parent has to. So, you know, if you've got a child that they're being raised in an environment that, you know, abusive behavior is okay, you know, there you're going to have a barrier for them, you know, their parents going and getting an order of protection. So, mm-hmm. yeah, hopefully, you know, eventually in the future we'll be able to get that so that, you know, minors can actually get the order of protection on their own.
Yeah, that'd be great. Really great.
All right.
Thank you very much. That was a great question.
Without a doubt. Mm-hmm. So anything else you would like to say while you're on the air? I mean, because we love that you have joined forces with, you know, educating at what you do, and we're on the same team educating together.
Yes, absolutely. Being a victim of domestic violence myself, on the end of trying to figure out, well, you know, how to give back to the community for Simply United Together, for what I've been through and being there for other people affected by domestic violence, you know, to share some of the stuff that helped me along the way and to, you know, come together with you guys and be a part of this is it's really great, and I'm really looking forward to it.
We really appreciate that. And before we put you on hold, I would like you to let the viewers around the world know what organization you work with as well.
Yes, it's called Simply United Together. We have chapters in pretty much every state and also international. And basically what we do is just get out there in the community and see where the need is and put our forces together with other organizations to volunteer in the community, do clothing drives, fundraisers, anything we can do to help. And that's, you know, what we're really about, trying to pay it forward and to be there for others.
That sounds great.
I have a question. I have a question for you. Would you be willing, are you willing to share your story?
Yeah. I've never really shared it before,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, to help others, because I know other women, you know, that were in the shelter, you know, and after they leave the shelter, they're back on their own, but still have, you know, but still looking for ways to have an outlet or a voice for after the shelters and the programs that they finish. You know, and I've gained some things that have helped me along the way, and I definitely
uh-huh.
would love to share that with others.
Well, are you in Arizona?
Yes, I'm in Phoenix.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes, you're going to speak the same day you speak, Ms. Bobby.
Oh, okay, because if you contact the Arizona Coalition Against Domestic Violence, they have what's
uh-huh.
called a SHARE committee. And
okay.
you know, they basically it's a group of women that have been in abusive relationships, and they are survivors, and they have, you know, basically, you know, decided that they're going to tell their stories, and you know, in one way or another. Some of them, you know, write poems, some of them write books, some of them publicly speak. But they get together every so often, and it's a wonderful group of women, and they do things together and everything. But if you contact the Arizona Coalition Against Domestic Violence and inquire about the SHARE committee, you know, I mean, I'm sure they'd love to have you.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I'll definitely look into that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. That sounds great. So we want you to hold on, and I want you to get a website out to your organization before we put you on hold.
Okay. All right, you want me to say it now?
yes, go ahead, Ms. Levine, put your website
okay.
out there.
It's just www.simplyunitedtogether, and then, of course, we are also on Facebook as well.
All right. And we just want everybody to know Ms. Alvina will be speaking along with Ms. Bobby at our first annual Domestic Violence Walk here in Arizona, September 14th as well. So we're going to put you on hold, Ms. Alvina. You hang in there with us, and we'll be right back
okay.
with you. All right, caller, you on the air?
Hello, how you doing? This is Don Buchanan.
Hey, Donna.
Hey, how you doing, Miss Buchanan? We're glad you was able to make it in.
Yes, definitely. I wouldn't miss it. It was a truly inspiring, you know, story, truly. You know, and it also, you know, brings back memories, you know, of my own past. You know, the situation that I, you know, was in also listening to her, you know, when I was about 17 years old. So it definitely, you know, it was a very moving story.
Yes, indeed. And Miss Bobby, you know, that's Miss Donna Buchanan. I also found Miss Buchanan off the ID channel as well.
Yeah, I actually heard the radio interview you did with her. It was a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Another inspiring story. You know, somebody that has, you know, turned a tragedy into triumph. So.
Yes.
Awesome work, Ms. Buchanan.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I really, really, that means a lot to me.
Yes. So, would you have a question for Ms. Bobby or Ms. Buchanan?
No, I just really wanted to, you know, give her my support and, you know, and tell her how much, you know, I'm behind her on this. And that, you know, this story, you know, her story really needs to be heard, you know, more, especially to young girls. There's so many young girls that get into relationships and, you know, and it's sad. And, you know, like I said, you know, the laws need to change. So this is just, this is something that really needs to get out there. And, you know, we need to get out to more young people, especially the young people.
All right. We appreciate that, you know. So we want you to hold tight there, Ms. Buchanan. And once again, we appreciate you riding with us tonight. And we want you to hang in there with us and hold on for a few minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you much. Okay, caller, you're on the air. Are you here, caller?
Here, I'm just listening.
Okay, would you like to say anything to Ms. Bobby?
No, sir.
We appreciate you. We appreciate you listening in, so just hanging out with us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. All right, back at you, Ms. Bobby.
All right. Well, definitely some great questions, and I appreciate the encouragement from everybody, including you and Lucinda, and the opportunity to work with you all. You know, if anybody would like for us to do a presentation or set up a display table at an event, we can be reached via our website at katiesway.org, and that's KAITYSWAY.ORG, or
right.
They can reach us by phone at 602-740-2734.
All right. All right. I'm going to pass the mic over to my missus. She got a few questions, Ms. Bobby.
Okay. All right. Just a few questions going back to what happened with Katie, and I was just wondering, that day, did anybody see him pull her in, or did she put up a fight? Could they tell if she had a struggle?
There was definitely a struggle. She actually, he rolled up on her right in front of the house, okay? And they're still in the street, but she took off running to the neighbor's yard because the neighbors were like, their grandparents. We're very close-knit area here. And, you know, they were like her grandparents. And so she actually literally went to their fence and tried to go over their fence to get in their backyard to get away from him. And there was evidence that, you know, I mean, because her book bag was on top of the fence. And there was evidence that because it was muddy, it was wet and muddy and all that. So, you know, evidence that she ran to the fence wall, was trying to get over it, that she was apparently pulled down off of it and drugged for a bit.
Wow. Now, who actually found them?
Actually, well, what it was is when she ran, you know, to go over the fence at the neighbor's house, they were working her, the husband and wife, you know, her grandparents, you know, that's just how we were. They were working in the garage with a table saw. So the table saw was on. And, yeah, it wasn't until they heard the second shot that, you know, something sounded weird to them. And the, you know, her grandfather came outside and saw, you know, that there were two bodies, two people down, you know. And so he was the one who found them. And actually, they ended up about 2 years afterwards walking away from the house because he could not handle living there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was having nightmares, you know, and so now they live in Idaho.
Wow. Now,
yeah.
How did their friends and the school handle the situation? I'm sure that made an impact, a big impact on that campus.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we were invited to, I was invited to tell Katie's story to some young ladies and at the school. And, you know, I've kept in contact with, you know, Katie's counselor at the school. And as far as how the school reacted and everything, it was very traumatic for the students. And the teachers, you know, all of Katie's teachers loved her. And, you know, there were two students from that school that were lost that day, you know, and both of them had people that cared about them in the school.
Right.
And so, you know, it was very devastating. And we were visited by the principal and vice principal of the school. And, you know, they came to the house. And, you know, when we had the viewing, it was standing room only. And it was on the east side of town, you know. I mean, so people from over here went all the way over to the east side of town, you know, to, you pay their respects and all of that.
Right.
And, you know, we were told by the people that run the place, mortuary, that they had never felt more energy in a room. You know, it was just she had so much life to her that it still emanated. And, you know, I mean, it was just, there were so many people, it was overwhelming.
Wow. And, you know, I think there was probably a lot of teenagers there. So
oh,
it was more,
Yeah, there were a lot of teenagers.
Tough situation for all of them. I'm just hoping that those kids learn by what happened to Katie, that, you know,
yeah,
not to be, and, you know, and girls are not the only ones that get abused and in relationships, even in teenage relationships, guys do as well.
So oh, yeah, you're absolutely right there.
We need to remember them.
Mm-hmm. No, it goes both ways. This is a very unbiased thing, okay?
Right.
It knows no boundaries. It knows no, you know, ethnic boundaries. It knows no cultural boundaries. It knows no socioeconomic boundaries. No, it happens everywhere, all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, it's just in, you know, like I said, we were just completely blown away. You know, this happened in the middle of the day. It was a Monday, you know, in the middle of the day. And, I mean, this is a halfway decent neighborhood. I mean, you know, we're not, you know, rich or anything like that. You know, it's just a basic average neighborhood. So, yeah, I mean, you don't expect stuff like that to happen. And it did.
Right. Yeah, you never expect those things for sure, especially with your own family. You always think you can handle it or... You know, and Katie probably thought, too, like a lot of young women think, they're invincible, that, you know, I can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I have my own plan. I know what to do.
Yep.
He would, you know, he won't do that to me.
Right.
And then it happens.
Yep. And that's the thing, and that's why we do these presentations, and that's why we share her story, because, you know, we want people to understand that, you know what, victims are not responsible in any way, and they're never to blame for somebody abusing them, okay?
Right.
All too often, you know, people will blame the victim. Well, it's not their fault. They don't have any control over what somebody says to them or does to them, you know? No more
right.
than, you know, they should be controlled.
Right.
We all, the only control we have is of ourselves, and that's it. So we all need to just work on controlling ourselves and you know, checking our own behavior and whatnot, you know. And, it, you know, as soon as people realize that, you know, we'll stop blaming the victims and start dealing with, you know, the inappropriate behavior. And what are we going to do about that? How are we going to stop that?
Right.
Well, let's educate on what appropriate behavior is.
You know, I was just going to ask you, in your opinion and in with what you've gone through, do you see that because of the way society is nowadays, is it getting better or worse? Because more people know about it, but it still exists all over.
Well, I'll tell you what, okay? When we first started on this journey, okay, it was 1 in 5 young people reported being in an abusive relationship. Well, there was a recent study out. Well, it actually went to 1 in 4, and then most recently it went to 1 in 3. Now, some people may look at that as, oh, wow, it's getting worse. No, 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 it's not getting worse, okay, because this is something we're evolving out of, okay, because if you think about it, in, you know, I mean, it wasn't until the 1920s that women were able to vote, okay, and not be property. Right?
Right.
And there was literally, I mean, are you familiar with the rule of thumb? You know, where, you know, the rule of thumb was that a man could beat his animals, children, and wife with a stick so long as it was not thicker than the width of his thumb.
Wow.
This was a rule back in the day, you know? So we're evolving out of this. So, yeah. It's, you know, we're seeing it 1 in 3, you know, nationally, okay, because what's happening is the awareness is getting out there and people are realizing, hey, abuse is not just physical, okay, it starts off emotional and verbally and then eventually it goes physical, you know, so it starts way before the physical part. And so people are realizing that they're in an abusive relationship. And they're reporting it. And, you know, we surveyed 4,000 young students from 13 to 18 years old in the state of Arizona, 4,000 of them from through 2011 and 2012. And our findings were 47% of them said they had known somebody in an abusive relationship. These are 13 to 18-year-olds, 47%?
Right.
Are you kidding me? This is horrific. And these are, you know, kids that are having their first relationships. 47%
barely dating or barely supposed to be dating.
Exactly, you know. And the thing about it is because they're very naive when they go into a dating relationship, you know, especially the first one. You know, I mean, just based on some of the stuff they see on TV and whatnot. You know,
right.
it's just, you really have to have that communication. You have to have that conversation with them.
Right.
And
you know, these are things that parents should be talking to their kids about and probably aren't most of the time. But are there any programs in the schools to teach kids what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in these kind of situations?
Some do. I'll tell you, Phoenix Union High School District, they did adopt a curriculum to educate on, you know, teen dating violence and healthy relationships. You know, there's over 200 school districts in Arizona. And I participated with former Senator Linda Gray back in, I believe it was 2010. I testified on behalf of a law that she was trying to pass to get healthy relationship education in the schools. And she originally introduced it as mandatory education. But unfortunately, it would not pass through the Senate unless it was watered down. So it was not mandatory. The school districts just had to vote on it. Well, you know, I had some volunteers, young people and adults, contact or attempt to contact every school district in Arizona with the help of the Governor's Youth Commission and the Arizona Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And, you know, we were able to find out that there's, I believe, 35 school districts, and it could be 37 school districts in the state of Arizona that have adopted a curriculum. Now, that's, you know, yeah, that's 30, you know, that we know of. And see, we didn't get callbacks from everybody and, you know, all the school districts and everything. So, you know, it's definitely a step in the right direction. But with Phoenix Union High School District, I really give them props because they are the largest, most heavily populated school district in the state. And so they're taking the lead on this. And, you know, I'm really glad that they're doing that. And, you know, we've actually presented at one of their schools, North High School. It was a presentation that went very, very well and everything. So, you know, we look forward to possibly getting in with other schools in the Phoenix Union High School District. And, you know, we're actually working with the City of Phoenix, who is working on a project for October called Paint Phoenix Purple in honor of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is October.
Right.
And so
they are
totally, and if you wanted more information on that, go to paintphoenixpurple.org. And, you know, you can read all about, you know, the movement to, you know, really paint Phoenix purple. There are just so many ideas out there, and there's so many people involved, you know, wanting to make this happen. So there's a lot of good information there.
Good. You know, I was just thinking that program is awesome, and it should be in every school. Even in junior high, though, you see a lot of, you know, 12 and 13-year-olds with boyfriends and girlfriends nowadays,
mm-hmm.
hanging out and, you know. But like I said, it should come from home, from parents, but a lot of times the parents are in the same situation, so a lot of kids aren't getting that.
Well, not only that, but, you know, if parents are educating their kids on this issue, that's great, okay? But if the schools will reinforce that, okay, because, you know, if the national statistics is 1 in 4 women report being in an abusive relationship, right? So
right.
You're looking at 25% of kids, at least 25% of kids are being raised in abusive environments, correct? And so
right.
They live what they learn. You know,
exactly.
Or they learn what they live. So
mm-hmm.
You've got 25% of students that are at the school, you know, not knowing what a healthy relationship is. So if the schools were actually teaching this, then, you know, not only would it be reinforcement for children like mine, okay, it would also be educate those that, you know, are not raised in, you know, a healthy environment to let them know that, you know, here's what a healthy environment is, and this is what you should expect from a relationship. And I'll tell you what, kids thrive on this education. I mean, 98% of the students that we surveyed said they want this education in their schools. They want to be educated on this. 98%. You know, I mean,
it's like the bullying thing that has just gotten taken way out of, you know, the bullying, and now it's the cyberbullying. You know, and they've had to jump on the bandwagon and do education in schools on that. You know, that's no different.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
And that's violence. That's harassment. That's, you know, mental, physical, everything.
Yeah, you know, and teen eating violence is bullying on an intimate level. It's still bullying.
Right.
So it all is intertwined, you know. And the you know, people talk about the root cause all the time, you know, But, you know, what we talk about is the root solution here. Because, this, you know, the solution we're going for is people, you know, realizing healthy relationships and having healthy relationships. And the reason I say it's a root solution, because if you think of all the different areas that, you know, could be solved by healthy relationships, because think about it, you know, I mean, people that are in unhealthy relationships, well, they turn to substance abuse, cutting, you know, I mean, there's all these different things that go on because people are very unhappy. If, you know, we educate people that it's okay to be happy and healthy relationships are the way to go, you know, we're going to see a decrease in not only, you know, domestic violence and teen dating violence, we're going to see a decrease in all these other areas as well.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that it's the only solution, but, you know, it's one of them.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm going to pass the mic back over to Rob.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's been a great, great interview with you, Ms. Bobby. And I would just like to ask you to tell the people right now, what advice would you give some parents that's going through that same situation that you was going through before your daughter ended up murdered? What advice would you give that parent?
Always, always be supportive, okay? Be supportive. They, you know, in when you think they're not listening, they are listening. Keep talking to them. Keep the lines of communication open. And, you know, if they have a cousin or if you know a young, you know, a peer, somebody that can talk to them, you know, get them to talk to them too. But always, always remain supportive. Do not let it frustrate you to the point that, I know that you get annoyed and everything like that, but don't turn your back. You got to stay in there because, you know, I mean, Katie ended the relationship. She ended it, and she was on her way, okay? So, you know, she was good to go. Unfortunately, you know, nobody predicted that he would have a shotgun in a duffel bag. So hang in there with your kids and just keep talking to them and go to our website and show them, let them read the summary about Katie's story so that they can relate and understand. And then, you know, we have a Get Help page and we have a Give Help page. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of information there and resources that you can go to. And just, you know, like I said, hang in there and just love them and encourage them and just keep them moving in the right direction.
All right. That sounds like a winner. We're going to go to another break, Ms. Bobby, and we're going to be right back with Ms. Bobby. Hang in there, ladies and gentlemen.
I want to say thank you to the Streets Don't Love You Back. This is a song that I did with my dad. It's about never giving up. My name is Jada, and this is my new song, Bring Up the Lights.
No, won't be fair. You ain't be scared. You gotta take a chance sometime. Just go over to her, take a hand, say, girl, you're gonna be mine. Cause time is on your side, but only if you hop. So what, you somewhere handicapped? Jackie, take this stop. Cause it might be your last lap around the oval track. You never know when it's time to go, so you need to go get that build up momentum. If it's needed, second on new, you better read it. If you believe it and you read the book, then I suggest you read it. Pay attention and listen so you relate to relativity. If it's your business, be busy. If you able, flexibility, have a plan. What is it? Man, a machine, dirty or clean. Tell them both don't come too close. Not they say, don't waste what they seem. Is it a dream or reality? You never quite know what it means. It's the secret of life. Anything you want will be the same.
Radio show worldwide, the streets and love you back. And I had to give much love to my little niece. That's our little niece, Jada, in Cincinnati, Ohio. Little Jada is 6 years old. She sings, she dances, she acts, she swims. She's a very talented little lady all the way around the board, and she's only 6 years old doing her thing with bruh, you know what I mean, in the studio already, putting down tracks. So we right back with Miss Bobby. Miss Bobby, any last words, any last advice, any last shout-outs you would like to give before we close the show?
Well, you know, shout-out to the Streets Don't Love You Back. You guys are doing awesome work, and keep it up. And I'm so glad that, you know, you saw the show and that we were able to, you know, hook up, and I see, you know, great things going on. Mrs. Buchanan, for her efforts, and, you know, everybody out there that is doing what they can do to promote, you know, healthy relationships and put an end to, you know, violence, period. So, and, you know, just everybody take care of yourselves and, you know, just listen to that gut feeling inside, because it's talking to you and it's telling you a story, and, you know, it knows what's good for you. So if it don't feel right, don't go into it.
Definitely. You know, and one more time, we want you to get that website out, Ms. Bobby, to your organization.
Okay, it's katiesway.org. That's spelled KAITYSWAY.org.
All right, that sounds good. And ladies and gentlemen that's listening around the world, don't forget, Ms. Bobby will be speaking at our first annual Domestic Violence Walk here in Arizona, September 14th. That's a day you don't want to miss. If you're listening to us on the air, go to our website, www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. All the information about the Domestic Violence Walk is there, and we look forward to seeing you, to being a loud voice against this abuse that kill day in and day out. And without further ado, you hang there for a few minutes, Ms. Bobby, and we're going to go to Ms. Buchanan for her last shout-outs.
Okay.
Hi. You know, once again, I want to, you know, tell Bobby, thank you for sharing your story. You know, I know it has to be very painful for you, you know, being your daughter, you know, this very, you know, hard subject to talk about. And the fact that you are, you know, just going out there and sharing this with everybody is just truly inspiring. Truly inspiring. And what you said about listening to your gut instincts, yes, I definitely, you know, want to put that out there too. Definitely listen to what your instincts are telling you, because most of the time it's right. You know, a lot of times we don't listen to what our instincts are telling us, you know, but a lot of times that, you know, it's telling you the right thing. And, you know, we need to, you know, follow that a little bit more and go with that. And also, you know, listen to, you know, what other people are telling us about these relationships. I know sometimes it's hard, you know, when you're involved in a relationship, you don't want to hear it, you know, especially when you're young. But, you know, you need to, you know, keep an open mind about it, you know, because this is a tragedy and we can't let this keep happening.
Sounds great, you know. And Ms. Buchanan, we appreciate you for tuning in to hear Ms. Bobby's story. And we want to let all the viewers know Ms. Buchanan's book will be coming out. Second Chance Runaway will be out September 30th worldwide. You can get the ebook or the paperback book, and that's going to be a very powerful story for young and old to learn from. You know, domestic violence can turn into tragedy, you know, and that's what we're trying to prevent here. And after spending 13 years in prison and was on death row before her sentence was commuted to 15 years, she got a dynamic story to tell these youngsters and older people, too, about these domestic violence relationships that can go totally sour. So we want you to look out for that book, Second Chance Runaway, coming September 30th. All right. We appreciate you coming in, Ms. Buchanan.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Oh, without a doubt.
All right. I would just like to thank everyone that tuned in tonight. And thank you, Bobby, so much for coming on and sharing your story and about your foundation, Katie's Way. And, you know, thank you for fighting for that law, for Katie's Law. So, you know, a lot more people can be protected. And like you said, Katie wasn't able to be, but, you know, hopefully we can try to help others down that right path. And if they know that law is in place, you know, then that's something that we can guide them toward.
You're so right, and you're very, very welcome.
Thank you so much. And Rob has one more comment. Hold on.
Yeah, Ms. Bobby, I wanted to let you know also, if you have any information as far as with domestic violence with your organization, I would like to get some of that information to send inside the prisons that we serve, because a lot of people that's on our movement inside the walls, they teach class, you know, with different things. So I would like some of that information to send inside the walls as well.
And you know what, Boyd? Actually, most everything we hand out is actually available on our website. I would suggest the Peace, Rights, and Responsibilities document, which is on our Healthy Relationships page.
Yeah.
You know, as well as I can definitely get you some brochures. So, yeah, we'll definitely hook up on that.
Right, and I'll get that inside the walls. And also, your message will be taught inside the prisons, too, against this domestic violence as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That'd be great. And if you can get us in there, we'll go.
Oh, that ain't nothing but an email and a phone call. You know, like I said, a lot of our members teach classes inside the federal and state prisons. So I'll reach out to my homeboy, Mr. George. He's been down 30 years, and he teach at the Coleman Max prison down in Florida. And they got a big event coming up in October, which I'm going to be speaking satellite, you know, and I'll send that information to Mr. George ASAP, you know.
Okay. That'd be great.
Thank you. All right. Well, join us back here every Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific Time, 11:30 Eastern, and we thank everybody for your support. and we're going to go out tonight with just a couple of commercials, and we'll be back next Wednesday night. Remember, the streets don't love you back. Good night.
Hey, are you looking for a new look and be fresh and hot at the same time? Well, my peeps, check out the Streets Don't Love You Back apparel. T-shirts, thermals, tank tops, sweatshirts, camisoles, hoodies, shorts, fitted caps, leggings, snapback caps, capris, jeans, beanies and scullies, backpacks, and much, much more. The Streets Don't Love You Back apparel for men, women, and children. Log on to www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com/page/store-1. That's www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com/page/store-1. The Streets Don't Love You Back apparel, a better way for a new look and be fresh.
Rise to power, violence, gangs, drugs, death, self-destruction, prison. The true life story of Detroit kingpin Rob Boyd, a must-read book. This book will be available online worldwide to order at thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com, at amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, indiebound.org, and borders.com. Also available in Detroit at Harlem World Books and Videos and at Human Bookstore on Frederick Douglass Boulevard. It's everywhere, so go ahead and order your autographed copy today. The Streets Don't Love You Back.